Supervisors. Good morning, George. Item 6B, RC&D.
Orcal, I'm George Jennings, the Executive Director of Orcal RC&D Project at Orcal RC&D Council, and I have with me Fraser Schilling, who's the wildlife,
Rodeology Center.
The Rodeology Center at UC Davis. So, and we're working on, we wanted to give you an update on our I-5 Sitka Mountains Wildlife Overcrossing Project, just planning and design. And I'm going to let Fraser, I know we got a lot of things on your agenda, so I'm going to just let him talk about the project and the progress we're making on the study and design.
This is funded by the Wildlife Conservation Board. Thank you very much, Board of Supervisor members, for hearing this update. I think you were here for last year's. I'm not assuming that you remember everything that I talked about, so it'll be some repetition. Who's in charge of the... Okay, can you go to the next one?
Yes.
Thanks. So I'm going to go through some basic description of wildlife crossings. You guys are familiar with these in concept. I'm not going to assume that you can picture all of them, but there are a lot of different kinds. Sometimes these are structures that are already present. This is a pipe culvert under I-5 through the grade, and that's a ringtail going through it. These were built for cattle access back and forth across the highway. And they pass a lot of smaller and medium wildlife, but deer have a hard time going through them. There's four or five of these through the Anderson grade. And these are just examples of a type of wildlife crossing that's already out there. But there's a lot of other kinds, as the bridges, so the Klamath River Bridge, the Shasta River Bridge, Cottonwood Creek, and so forth. And then, of course, there's the overcrossings, and those are the kind that we are focusing on. Go to the next slide. And, sorry, a couple more pictures of undercrossings. So these are, all of these were built for wildlife. They are built for different kinds of wildlife. They actually, the ones that are standing in them were mostly the target of those structures. So the one on the top left was built for deer and elk in Wyoming. Elk have never used it, probably because the highway is immediately above the top of the picture. The one on the bottom right was built for mountain lions, and mountain lions use it all the time. And then others were built for other reasons. And so there's different kinds of these. Some of these are bridges. The one on the little video there, the black and white video, that was an undercrossing on Interstate 90 in Washington of a complex of six crossings that are all right next to each other. Next slide. Okay, then overcrossings. These are the focus of our current planning and design. These are two on the right are ones that actually exist there in Europe. There's not a lot of pictures of structures like this in the US. And there's only one in California. Congratulations, Siskiyou County, for hosting the first wildlife overcrossing over State Highway in California. And then the ones on the left are just drawings. Next slide is fine. So what we want to do is reduce wildlife vehicle collisions, especially ones with large animals. This is not a great map on the far right, but the purple dots all through basically our study area show costly collisions where you had a minor injury or greater through the area north of Shasta Valley. And so we're prioritizing locations to reduce those collisions and also connect wildlife across the highway. Next slide. So we start with ecology and then we move to engineering. We're done with the ecological part and we're on to the engineering feasibility documentation with Caltrans, and we finish with a 65% design, which is basically a project that you could put out to bid for construction, and that'll be done within a year and a half. Next slide. So we collected a lot of different kinds of data. We had access to private property. What's Fruit Growers called now?
Acer.
Acer. So they gave us access, our ranch, great access to get pictures of where are the wildlife right now, and then a lot of other kinds of data which tell us where is a good place to put a wildlife crossing. Next slide. These are the collisions through our study area and also all the way down to Mount Shasta, or close to Mount Shasta, and you can see all those dots in the top part of the map, I-5. That's our study area, and as all of you know, there's been a lot of collisions there, including with all different kinds of sizes of animals, including two elk in our study area. Next slide. Yes, you can skip this one. So we put all of these data through what we call a prioritization model, and That is basically a geographic model, a mapping model that allows us to pick from a lot of different kinds of data. Where's the place that meets all of our requirements? Next slide. And we came up with some priority locations. Now, in this case, purple means it's a high value. And this is where it gets tricky, because a lot of the highway, you could build a crossing and it's going to meet a lot of our needs. The issue is primarily that not all of it is in public land. And those are the easiest places to build wildlife crossings. So if you look at the area south of the Klamath River, where there's green on the outside of the purple, those are public lands on both sides, stretches of the highway. So those are the areas we focus mostly. We also looked at some areas in private lands, but mostly we focused on those. Next slide. And this could keep going up. I'm realizing I'm running out of time. I've skipped over one thing, but our final priorities are these lettered areas, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. We did a couple of field trips recently to visit these, including Supervisor Ogren and Caltrans and Department of Fish and Wildlife, or CalRCDC, and basically inspected all of these to see what is going to make sense on the ground, so not just in the computer, and is it going to work, and where could you put it, and so forth. As a reminder, the ones at the south, A, B, C, D, these are all in public land areas, and then E, F, G are in areas with private land on both sides, and so we're not sure if those are going to work out. The darker the purple, the better the spot. Next slide. Okay, so here's what they look like up close, and you'll see a theme through the grade, and that is, since we're building an overcrossing, we're looking at areas where you have higher land on both sides. And so basically a road cut. And this is a very simple idea of basically spanning the road cut. It's the most cost-effective way to put a crossing over a highway because you've already got topography, you don't have to grade it. So that's true for all of those, A, B, C, and D. The first one, which is next to the big pullout with a little communication box, you guys are probably familiar with this when you go north. It actually has a, you can see down off to the bottom of the right, this is an A, bottom right of the picture, goes down into a valley. We're actually thinking we'll probably put an undercrossing there rather than an overcrossing. That was one benefit of the field visit. And as a reminder, all through this area, there are some existing tunnels, but they're just not passing deer. So deer are still trying to go over the highway. Next slide. You let me know if I'm missing anything.
The fair was a big benefit for us to get to meet the public and talk about this project. But one of the things that came out was a gentleman driving a tow truck the day the freeway opened. He recorded 234 deer kills on Anderson Grade that one day, the first day the freeway opened. So there were a lot of deer up there. And there aren't so many anymore, but that has to do with the barrier. Just talk about that ABCD area.
So that was the Anderson Grade ABCD area. And that's probably where we would focus when we're thinking about deer. And then EFG is really much more about elk. And this doesn't make our job easier at all to have two different priorities in these adjacent areas. But elk don't go down to the Anderson Grade currently. But they are present, the hill turd is present in the EFG areas. The furthest down they go is actually right at E. It's been the furthest that an elk has crossed I-5 and then went back. They've also crossed at Area G, which is just north of the Acer property on the west side and just south of the Hilltop Ramp. So these are all locations for overcrossing. These overcrossing locations would probably be more expensive because you don't have as much of the road cut benefit, so there would be a lot more grading and construction requirements. These would all be funded by somebody else, not the county.
Yeah. Another thing is we're looking at existing infrastructure like the Cottonwood Creek Bridge and improving it, which is way less expensive than building an overcrossing. So there's a lot of barriers vegetation-wise and things. So we're looking and we got to meet some of the landowners adjacent to that crossing. So, and they're very supportive. So we're looking at that, including that in the project, other areas where we can just improve infrastructure. And not, we want to have an overcrossing, but we want to use the cheaper opportunities also that are out there. So.
Yeah, especially if there's interested landowners, which is really nice.
And then Cottonwood Creek Bridge is at the south kind of distance that you see most of the elk. come down into...
They just can't get into the bridge, which is probably big enough for them, but there's just really no good access for them to cross under right there.
So we're working with Caltrans to improve, do improvements in existing infrastructure.
And adjacent land.
And with the adjacent landowners, and also, design and be ready to build an overcross, at least one overcross.
So I tried to go fast, but happy to go back if you guys have any questions. Yeah.
I have a question. What's Caltrans' tolerance to doing some of this work on Highway 3 in Scott Valley? Because over the last 10 years with the increased traffic on Highway 3, our deer population's virtually gone.
Yeah.
And we're in conversations with them about Highway 3. And there's a lot of animals get killed over there. I used to work over there and I've got a couple myself. If you had people raise hands, everybody's probably either hit or seen a dead deer in this county. So it's a big problem. I think the focus of Caltrans right now is probably the higher traffic, the Interstate 5, they're kind of working their way down, but there's some opportunities with improved technology around warning lights. I know they had a system out there years ago that didn't really work, but there's some really good working systems now that could be implemented in Scott Valley just to kind of get, even Highway 3 coming out of Wairega, the big turn, deer come right off that ridge. And that would be an opportunity to put in a warning system for people just to reduce the number of kills.
Yeah, that's probably more appropriate, or fencing.
I'm thinking three or four places in Scott Valley that had decent underpasses. Would work really well.
Yeah, you just fence to the underpass.
Right.
Yeah, it's the cheapest, best way to do it.
Yeah, and then, is the insurance companies involved in this at all, putting pressure on Caltrans? They certainly should be, because that's all we see.
I just thinking about contacting them to see if they'd be supportive or even a funder to help us get some of the seed funding toward that grant that would build the crossing.
There's insurance agencies, insurance companies fund a research institute called IIHS, and they told me something really useful 10 years ago. They said, there's no benefit to insurance companies to decrease the rate of crashes. Because if you have a crash, your premium goes up. Right?
Yeah.
When I heard that, I was like, okay. That discussion's over. So,
I know that from experience.
We keep mentioning deer, and I see that most often, but what about bears? Because in South County, I predominantly see bear care.
Yeah.
They benefit from overcrossings and undercrossings. Or have to use both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your part of the county definitely is a hot spot, all the way actually down through
into Shasta County,
all the way down to the lake.
Yeah,
is a hot spot for bear collisions. Absolutely.
And the barrier, like they have on the Anderson Grade, that barrier in the middle just stops them when they get hit.
Yeah,
they can't.
There's a lot of possibilities for not just one, multiple out 89, and you can pick a spot.
Oh yeah, pick a highway.
And so when we talk about prioritizing, is it the low-hanging fruit, where can we get the funding and the consent of the landowners? Because obviously on public property, a lot easier than trying to deal with landowners.
And land trusts help too. If you can get a land trust to take the easement, and that helps locate it. But I think funders really look hard at that access with public money to make things much easier, less expensive.
Yeah, we tried to get another project going south towards Weed, and basically the Wildlife Conservation Board, who funded the study, said you've already got one in the county, and they don't need to recognize the size of the county or the diversity of the county, So I think we should probably try again in a year or two, but these are expensive to the fund, because the documentation and design process is very costly.
Yeah,
I
can see
that.
I can see that from their point. I mean, I drive enough times to Reno, let's say, and you go through Shasta, Lassen, there's a need everywhere, really.
Yeah.
Speaking of elk, there were two elk killed in the fencing right near the Weed Airport. So they were going toward Parks Creek. Mm. And at that bridge, somewhere in that, if there was better fencing just in that one place where they go under that bridge. Elk can be spear off into that. They're very successful in Siskiyou County. They're becoming a bigger problem for drivers, too.
And District 2 Caltrans is definitely interested in all of these areas that you brought up.
One more question on the feasibility piece, the landowner cooperation. How far outside of Caltrans right away do you have to get permission, and what's the effect
Yeah, so the picture right behind you.
Right away?
Yeah, so the picture right behind you, you could probably build the structure in terms of construction within the right of way, but you'd be right up against a fence line as soon as you hit the edge of the ramp, the crossing. So they're not really, no one will fund those unless you have agreement or ownership on both sides going out into nature.
Yeah. We have agreement on the Acer Klamath side. Yeah. They would be a willing partner.
Yeah,
the side of the freeway in that area, which is where they all are. So.
Yeah, or if you have extensive ranch land and no fencing, and you know you've got a friendly landowner who says, "Yeah, that'd be great," then probably you could get it funded as well. So the funding part is really critical. The cheapest, like the Highway 97, was $20 million, and so something like this area right here is going to be more like 30 to 40. So these are state and federal and. They've made it pretty clear what the rules are if you want that kind of money.
Orcal is doing photo monitoring on the 97 project. Just want to let you know that some of the pictures of the first animals to cross before it was even finished, where deer were crossing it, they went nationwide. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's a
and
big
there's been deer on there almost every day. We have cell cameras out there.
And we've seen bear and
coyote, jackrabbit.
Yeah, we had a jackrabbits and coyotes. I don't know if that.
One right after the other.
Oh, but there was a deer last night, right after some guys finished up for the work for the day yesterday. So they're all there.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of attention for positive attention for Sydney mm-hmm. County having that crossing over there on 97.
Yeah.
Anything else over here? No.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Seven A, County Fire.
All right, good morning, Board of Supervisors. My name is Kent Cunningham. I'm the Deputy Fire Chief for Cal Fire here in Siskiyou County. I'm also the Deputy County Fire Warden.
I'm Bernie Paul, South Barbara Fire Chief and the President of the Chiefs Association.
So first of all, Chief Roth apologizes that he can't be here. He is on assignment in Colorado, which is unprecedented for Cal Fire to send resources that far. So he's over there with those resources. So today, you get myself and Chief Paul to talk about the 2025 Siskiyou County Fire Department's annual report. To be respectful of your time, there's just a couple highlights I'd like to go through with you really quick, and then I'll turn it over to Chief Paul, and we'll be on our way. So a couple of the highlights. The first one I want to highlight is the cooperative agreement between Siskiyou County and Cal Fire. This agreement allows Cal Fire to rent county equipment during fires, and the state reimburses the county for those services, which we then reinvest into dispatchers, water tenders, fire engines, and chippers and stuff, and redistribute out to the local government fire departments out there. So it's a really good, strong relationship that we've had since, I believe the agreement was signed in 1978, and we're still going strong with that, so we really appreciate that cooperative working relationship. And it's allowed all of us to be successful in this county, which is the goal. The second item in this report that I would like to highlight is how successful we were last year with wildland fires in Siskiyou County. We suppressed many wildland fires throughout the county, and several major incidents we threw resources at that were not state responsibility area or Cal Fire's direct protection area. So with the collaborative working relationship with our local government entities and our Cal Fire resources, we were able to get in there and contain many fires that were not state responsibility areas, such as the Root Fire, the Butler incident downriver and stuff. We chose to engage in those, and it was very successful with the local government bringing their water tenders for us. So in here it'll have several reports out on those fires, total acres, number of lightning strikes and stuff. Really encourage you to read that. And then the last thing I would really like to highlight is the fuels reduction work that we are completing here in Siskiyou County. If you're unaware, the Cal Fire Siskiyou unit is the second or third smallest unit in the state of California, between the Mexico border and the Oregon border, and we are the leaders in treated acres in the state of California. So our men and women, with the cooperation of our local volunteers and stuff, are going to work every day to treat acres, and we lead the state from the Oregon border to the Mexico border on the most treated acres statewide. And so we're super proud of that. We're super proud of those relationships. And it takes a village to get those things done. I'm sure you saw smoke in the air the other day as we continue to work those projects to really protect our communities here in Siskiyou County. So those are the three things. It's a great report. Those are the three things I really wanted to highlight for you to review. And I'll pass it over to Chief Paul.
All righty. A couple things that I'd like to highlight real quick. I'd like to publicly thank the Board of Supervisors, County Finance, and the Radio Tech with all of our county fire upgrade to Siskiyou, our TACNet and its command net. It's working great. It's the first time we've been able to utilize it in like 30 years. And so it's been just an absolute wonderful thing. So that has been just a real success. The other success is our agreement through the County Fire Warden and the Chiefs Association with COS on our training program. We've really brought a lot more of the volunteer departments within it, getting training, so that has been a success. I think we need to kind of run with that a little bit more. It works real well. A couple other things real quick. I did submit for a AFG FEMA grant to upgrade the radios of the rest of the departments to meet the Wildland Agency's requirement. None of them really meet the requirement. The radios are all early 2000 vintage. They're not P25 compliant, and they do not have enough frequencies in it. So I did take that on. It was a lot more work than I anticipated. We're trying to get all the data stuff for 27 departments and into them. It was a little stressful trying to write down to the end, and I think I had like 35 hours trying to put that thing together, but I did get it submitted. They accepted it. We'll find out in probably sometime in August whether we're successful or not. Another grant that's kind of going on, I got contacted by Community Development, and we're working on a grant for turnouts to bring everybody into compliance with that. And one thing that really kind of came to light is some of the departments have done nothing and have zero compliancy in their PPE. I think one or two departments are the only ones that are compliant, and it's not a recommendation, it's a law. OSHA passed a law in California. They have to have a couple sets less than 10 years old. So that's something I'm hoping that we can work through. It's a little bit more than I thought. You know, it's over $1 million to bring the departments up to compliance because they're between $4,000 and $5,000 a set to be able to get those in. Some of them don't have any that are less than 10 years old, which I was really surprised. A couple other things real quick. As you go through the report, the numbers for the incidents and stuff, one thing that's left out, and I was trying to get in there, are the mutual aid responses. In my department, I know the numbers, it adds a third to the total. So we're responding a third of the calls outside of our district supporting our other district. So it's a huge workload. It takes mine from 200 to 300 calls on there. And a lot of the departments are in that same boat. So that's out there. Retention recruitment. The Chiefs Association, we've looked a lot at the retention recruitment, what's successful, what's not. And it boils down to two things, leadership and training equals success. We've been working on the training and we've got some success there with Cal Fire and the college and going down that road, but we're lacking the leadership. On it. Every year we turn over some chiefs. There are very few chiefs that really know what they're supposed to be doing. And it's kind of scary. We're going to be losing some of our long-term chiefs that actually know what to do. They're retiring out. So we need to look at what we can do for leadership in that. That's kind of a really scary thing to me because we're just losing that corporate knowledge that's there. And I'm probably one of the ones leaving. I'm 70, and it's like, I don't know how much longer I can keep going. You know, you get medical issues, and I told myself if once I become a liability, I'm going to leave, and so I'm getting close to that. A couple other things. Cal Fire statewide has gone to a tablet command. You're probably going to be hearing more about that. It's a program for accountability, dispatch, and all that. That we're working on a piece of that's going to go to local government, so the accountability will fall into there. All of our information comes from it. You'll probably be hearing more about it from Greg and the County Fireway. It's a great program. I hope you guys support it on there. So I'm really excited about that piece to it. One thing I did, I finally got somebody to take The minutes for the Chiefs Association is working on it now, so you guys will be getting the minutes more readily. So you guys will know what we're talking about, what's going on. So that piece is there. In the past, you guys have wanted us to be talking about consolidation. I have been talking about that. There are some departments that need to consolidate, that want to consolidate, but we're lacking the leadership. And I don't really know what direction you guys want to go. I know for the Chiefs, the leadership piece is just missing. It's something at some point we're probably going to need to talk about with you and County Fire or something, provide that leadership. We can't just keep turning it over to Chiefs that can't say no and don't know where to go with it. Because we're losing some of our departments. Some of the numbers in here have changed dramatically as far as how many volunteers. We have some that we had 18 in here. They have two guys on the department. And there's a lot of departments. I looked at the numbers and questioned whether they're true or not. Because I go to a lot of the calls, and you just don't see that many people there. Lastly, costs are going up. Fuel, audit, repairs, they just keep skyrocketing. While pay, especially on some what we make money on the forest agency fires, has come down, FEMA hit us really hard. They dropped the pay by a third this year, and right in the middle of, you know, fuel prices up. So I don't know what to do about. You know, for example, the water tenders were $148 an hour. They take them down to $98. The reason behind it is FEMA is a national agency, so it's a national cost. You know, even though our fuel's a couple dollars higher out here, we have to go at the national cost. So we're hoping to renegotiate that and get some headway on it. But, you know, you add in the two sets of turnouts, SCBAs, extractors, it's just the cost just keeps skyrocketing. Lastly, we still have homeowners that are losing insurance. I'm actually seeing homes falling out of escrow because they can't get insurance on them. And a lot of it is from the fire departments and how they, you know, where they're at in proximity of the stations, outside of department jurisdictional areas. We need to come up with a plan that everybody can support to be able to expand that and be able to take care of some of those. Because it's, you know, I've seen three of them, and I get calls every day wanting to know if they're in the department or they're not. And it's just, we're not making any headway. Anyway, with that, any questions that we can answer for you guys?
Just one real quick, you mentioned leadership. Wouldn't that still benefit consolidation because it's easier to find one instead of two?
Absolutely. Okay. And with leadership, you select a leader that knows what to do, which will bring a lot of those departments up in their training standards. You know, I've been working with the college doing training, and I've kind of taken a couple other departments that haven't along with me, and it's surprising how they really respond to the training. You know, they're hungry, they want it. They want that kind of training. So it's something that we need to kind of keep going down that road.
And then finally, getting back to the turnout, because they are wildly expensive. What's the ultimate answer? I don't know where we're gonna find money to get these entities up to date. I mean, it's just...
Well, if this grant goes through, that's one way. What I've done with my department is Cal Fire has a neighborhood fire department grant, and I have done five every year. They've been paying for it on the wildland thing, and I've got mine. I have two turnouts for every department, but we've spent the money and used those grants to get it every year because I knew this was turning into a law, and I don't want my department or myself being liable for it, so we stepped up.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, that I would see with a countywide fire department is consistency in program delivery and consistency in direction to those individual units. Because I know some of them really struggle with, you talk about the ones out of compliance, do they even know it?
No. You know? Yeah. Oh, I talked to them, I had to call every one of them to see how many turnouts they needed.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, we need like 20 sets. And I'm like, how many do you have? Well, we don't have any that are compliant. It's not a recommendation, it's a law.
Yeah.
On there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the beauty there. And then I don't expect it to be bad mouthing anybody, but I guess what I need to know is I need to know how myself or this board can increase the cohesion between the federal agency and Cal Fire, because I'll be honest with you, I was not impressed with the annual meeting that I attended. It seemed like a lot of confusion.
Yep.
And going into a fire season, that really spells disaster in my mind. So anyway, any way I can help, I appreciate the details. You can share those in private with me.
You know, and I picked up on that too, and I think a lot of that.
I left early.
Yeah, the confusion where they don't even know where they're going.
Yeah, I know.
And it was really hard for us that are trying to, you know, kind of get them going in the right direction.
I'd like to be able to get ahead of that so that we're not in that, trying to sort that out, that confusion with the confusion of responding to a large fire later on this year.
Well, and you know what's happened this year is there's no contract agreement out. There's very few departments that have it. I got dispatched to a fire downriver, and then they turned me around because agreement wasn't up to date, and they've done nothing since then.
Yeah.
On there, I'm just.
Well, the wildland fire science guy, our service guy that came up, seemed to think that most of the county was department period.
Okay.
Yeah. Look at a map.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Supervisor Cobb.
So, we've talked about county fire for as long as I've been on the board, and I think even Supervisor, former Supervisor Marsha Armstrong, was pushing on it 20 years ago, and here we are yet, right? And that's nobody's fault, but we know that it's a dicey conversation because nobody wants to pay, but yet you're paying for it on your insurance. Mm-hmm. So you got to look at it. Where do you want to put your money? I know that South Wairika Fire has been kind of the experiment, the guinea pig in the wheel on consolidation. I don't know if we ever finished that. I think Montague was the next one that was going to start, but we were trying to close the gap countywide through the departments that were already there. So we're not there yet?
No.
Okay.
No.
Are we on track to being there yet?
No, we've actually went backwards.
Yeah.
And to be truthful with you, the chiefs today are open to consolidation. 20 years ago, there were some chiefs out there that weren't there. It was their area. Now we all know that it's like we can't. I've been working on a list of what chiefs need to do as far as reports and keep it updated. It's like a two-page list, and it's like most of them don't even know that on there. So, you know, we need to keep going on that one.
Okay.
If we could just get one to start.
Yeah.
I we would do whatever we could at this end to support that. I mean, particularly with some of these chiefs that are ready to retire, move on. I'm always worried about South County.
Oh,
Chief
me too. Chief
has been at it quite a long time.
It's happening down there.
Yeah, I know. And so, you know, I just think it's more efficient, I guess, would be the appropriate word, where you just have one chief,
absolutely,
leadership-wise, and then, you know, it just sounds practical. But, yeah.
It's that leadership.
Yeah.
That leadership, here we're going, and here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there specific leadership training? I mean, we have a lot of, you set up so much really, really good training through the college for everybody. But is there specific leadership training for chiefs, for upcoming chiefs?
You know,
that would
20,
be so
20 years
helpful.
Ago, we hired Ronnie Coleman. He's been state fire marshal, super trained. He came in and did training, and it was really well received. None of those chiefs are around anymore, and it's something we need to do again. But it's like, what are they going to do? I can't even get them to come to chief's meeting.
Well,
and then I throw an idea out there, and I'll say an idea, and they're like, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, you guys don't have any ideas? Not nothing.
Well, I you know I go to the chief's meeting.
I know.
And
you see it?
I do see it. And there's a lot of, you know, kind of head nodding. But it's never yes. It's always kind of side to side.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you build that kind of enthusiasm back? How do you do team building? How do you do those kind of exercises that build that momentum back up when, you know, it's kind of that day and age now where it's hard to get volunteers, it's hard to get people to get enthused about anything. It's hard to do. What do you do? How do you get that?
Well, I know one thing we've been doing that's been working really well is through the college doing training in the evening. And what really opened my eyes, when we had the PPE safety inspection training, we had unbelievable, you know, turnout for that. And so that those kinds of things are working a little bit more, so we're trying to do more of that.
But how do you get your leaders to engage? That's the thing.
Well, that's why we went to this platform that all the firefighters can get on the training platform, because we couldn't even get the chiefs to relay the training to their firefighters.
Well, that, and I've seen that disconnect. It's like you're trying to get your firefighters engaged and trying to get them information when your leaders aren't passing on that information. I've heard that conversation in your meetings. So it's like you've even bypassed your chiefs and gone straight out to the list to try to get people information because your chiefs aren't relaying the information to people.
Yeah.
That's a problem in itself.
Yeah.
So maybe you have the wrong chiefs in place.
You know,
and
what?
Maybe...
Well, and that's where the consolidation comes in.
Right.
Instead of having three chiefs of these smaller departments, why not have one chief and then put a captain at each station? The captain's responsible for
right.
the station. Now, and now you consolidate those budgets. It goes a lot farther. You consolidate coverage,
yeah.
all that. So we need to sit down. We need to draw a map.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll need your support to have those conversations with those cities and those districts to come to the table and have that conversation.
Maybe it is time for reorganization. Maybe it is time to look at things a little bit differently because it's not really working very well.
It's not
right
going to get any better either. It's really a thankless job to be a volunteer.
Yeah.
It really is. It's
we
a
know,
lot of hard work on top of what you do. Yeah, right. I don't have to tell you. But yeah, it's getting harder and harder in today's
yeah.
world.
So, but I do think that leadership training somehow, some way, is really the key to trying to get those folks that are in those positions a step above what you everybody else. Give them a leg up.
Work on that. We have Chris. He's Delacorte at the college. He's got some folks. So as soon as we get kind of out of fire season, we'll be scheduling those. Because we're not going to get them during fire season at all, but maybe in the wintertime we can get more of the chiefs there.
Yeah.
Or even the assistant chiefs. I'm looking at the upcoming ones. Let's
yeah.
train
exactly.
them and get them in there.
Exactly. Because
yeah.
it's not only about knowledge, but it's also about respect. And
it is, and it's the passion
yep.
to always be progressive, learning more, and keep moving forward.
Exactly. Yeah. So, good. Thanks.
One more thing.
Okay.
So... can the Chiefs Association, something maybe Bernie and yourself here, can give us an outline of what consolidation would look like, knowing that we have volunteer departments, we have city departments, but just let's start to scratch the surface on what this could actually look like so that we can have some form of a minor plan going forward, because we continue to talk about this year after year after year. And I know the state of California doesn't make it easy on the volunteers, the chiefs and that. Everybody just kind of throws their hands up and goes, yeah, I'm the chief. Okay. I don't want to do any more than that because it's too regulatory. So whatever you can give us a small bite at to move this forward, whether it's getting South Waurika Fire consolidated like we've tried to expand, or Montague next. I know even Mount Shasta Fire Protection District was one as well. That
was one of the best things that happened is when the district consolidated with the city.
Yeah.
You took two chiefs
yeah.
that were making this amount of money,
yeah.
and you brought them together. You
yeah.
got one that oversees.
Well, and they have more area that they can expand to.
Absolutely.
But I know that LAFCO is a problem for
it's
some of
a
them.
Challenge.
Yeah, and somehow we need to be able to expedite that for this because it's got to happen. Because homeowners, whoever's moving in or trying to sell or buy, insurance is a big factor, and fire departments are key to that. And having the whole county under an umbrella, and well, I know we have CSA, what is it, four, but it was a stopgap 20 years ago, but it doesn't work anymore. So we need to fill in the holes that are still there.
No, and it does impact the county as far as revenue.
Yeah.
You get a house, you know, $1.9 million, and I can't sell it for no insurance.
Yeah.
And then it ends up going back to the bank, and
yep.
it's sold for less than half.
Yep.
You just lost half the revenue for
yep.
that, and that's happening
yep.
over and
property
over
tax,
and over
yep.
now.
I think the timing's right for consolidation, particularly fire insurance, and you know, all these factors that I've been at this far too long with the municipal service review decades ago since consolidation. But I think about CSA 3, instead of funding what it's used for, to fund, you know, morph it into the equipment or the turnout gear or whatever, instead of, you know, an entity that doesn't need it anymore, you know. I just think we can do better, and maybe we just got to step up, and I'm talking collectively, and push for it.
So, with that said, I'm going to say the dirty word here, but from a funding standpoint, this is exactly what taxpayers' dollars are supposed to be used for. And we need to move on with this. I think the, from my perspective, I think the operational aspect of consolidation is fairly simple. I mean, it's going to be difficult, but you know, the agencies are organized that way. You know, and I don't, it's not a stretch. We don't have to reinvent the wheel there. I hate to ask this question, but I'm going to. What do you do with the boards, the governing boards?
So that's going to be your challenges, right? Your challenges are going to be your governing boards, and they're also going to be the fire chiefs that don't want to leave their current position in which they're in.
Yeah, I disagree to this extent. I have a hard enough time trying to find people on a board. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to use the fire protection district board. Once I get them there, I just pray that I can get a few years, because the next, you know, it's a recurring thing. I'm trying to find someone. And it's hard to get people, because they're all busy, to step up and be involved. Sure. They want to point the finger about insurance rate or whatever, but it's like, hey, well then get involved. Yeah. Help us figure out the problem. Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully they'd be willing, and that would just make it.
You'd be surprised how they say it. No thanks.
I think a lot of the boards, though, would welcome some of it. I mean, they're having such a hard time keeping the board staff to abolish,
you know, it. It's one and the same. We're trying to do better. I think we're at the time where people were less willing to be in their little fiefdoms, if you will. It's time to step up and let's move on, because it's going to be ultimately a benefit not only to the county, because we need revenue and property taxes based on rising prices or whatever, but just trying to get people to step up, whether it's volunteers, you know, all those things become much easier when you have a consolidated, a bigger entity, if you will.
Yeah, and the ultimate winner would be the public in which we serve.
Absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we sell to the public.
1,000%.
Well, and I think the money even the departments are funded with now all pooled together would be so much more efficient.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're funding things where there's so many overlaps, mm-hmm. and stuff now where it's redundant. We could really clean a lot of that out.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you still start, take a small bite. You get a consolidation like South Waikiki Fire or your expanded district, show how it can work, because everybody else is looking, and if it's complicated, they're like, yeah, it's not working up there, so why should we embrace it? Because if you take it in totality, I think you're going to have a bigger complication. But if you take an area and just start to consolidate and move north or south, however it works,
sure.
I think you'll have a higher success, because everybody else is watching from the outside.
It will. And part of the problem that I have been running into is the funding that comes from your fire district to spend it outside of your fire district is very difficult within the district. So we need to kind of come up with it.
Well, that's where that expansion comes in, to take the borders in, because my understanding was, I know yours is a little more complicated because you're under Prop 13, but like Mount Shasta, I'll use Mount Shasta Fire Protection District. Mm-hmm. If they, and they've been trying, but I don't know where they're at, expanding their area, their fee goes with it, so that property, you know, we'll use on the west side of Lake Siskiyou, properties over there are not in the district, yet that district supports fire-related activity, you know, to respond, but there's not a participation, if you want to call it, like the ones that are already in the district that are paying whatever it is, $65 or $75 a year. By doing that, it's a revenue generator, but it's also filling in those gaps. But the Prop 13 ones are the difficult ones, because then we come up against the county revenue part of it, and we all know what that means. So, but the fee ones, it should be a little more easy, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think that you're going to get resistance from some property owners, but I think you'll get a lot of support from other ones too, especially today.
Yeah.
With insurance, you know, and it's pretty laid out, where if you're within 5 miles of the fire station, insurance will look at you a little bit harder. If you're outside of that, they're not even going to look at you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
on there. So there are some things that we've really learned through this that would help selling that out to the public.
Agreed.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. Thank you.
Stick around for a few more years for me, Bernie.
Trish, you're up. Item 7B. That was a long 5-minute presentation. So that was a long 5-minute presentation.
Well, Ms. Barbieri, I had hoped half the crowd would have stuck around to hear this presentation. I think this is important stuff that gets out of the park too often.
I agree. Trish Barbieri, Director of Social Services Division with Health and Human Services Agency. I think you, Mr. Chair, said the last presentation would be 5 minutes. And I know we have 20 minutes. It's not going to take 20 minutes.
You're scaring me.
So.
It would be more like five.
Yeah, it should be quick. But at your request, we're returning today to talk about fiscal year 25-26, quarter three department stats for the various caseloads that Social Services manages. Kirk Hendricks will do the presentation.
Good morning. So in front of you, we have our quarterly stats on the first page. We did the recommendation of removing duplicates. So if a case was there for January, February, March, it's only being counted as one, not as three times. So starting with CalWORKS, we had 486 cases consisting of 1,234 individuals, and we spent a little bit over $1.4 million. CalFresh, we had 5,799 cases with 9,984 individuals and spent right under $5 million. Medi-Cal, we had 9,299 cases with 15,531 individuals. We don't have any expenses for that as it's done by the state. The rest of these cases, I'm just going to say the person count because it's one person per case. So General Assistance, we had 30 individuals and spent $33,000. We had 101 foster care individuals and spent $671,000. We had 241 adoption individuals and spent right over $1.4 million. 321 adult protective services and spent no money. We don't do services for those individuals. IHSS, we had 527. There's a correction. The expenses should actually be 363,000, not the 2.1 million. CMSP, we had no cases. And public guardian conservator, we had three. Going on to new cases, we had 27 new CalWORKS cases, 467 new CalFresh cases, 437 Medi-Cal, 9 general assistance, 8 foster care, 9 adoptions, 211 child abuse reports were received during the quarter, 173 adult protective services, 41 IHSS, no CMSP, and no public guardian or conservator.
So in the new cases, is that a trend upward or steady or?
We will get to that in a moment. There'll be a graph that will show each one of those. So for fraud activity, we had 7 early fraud referrals for CalFresh and 15 ongoing. For CalWORKS, we had 5 early fraud referrals and 5 ongoing. And general assistance, we had 16 early fraud referrals. Every general assistance case that we get gets reported to fraud for an investigation. The next two pages are just the monthly stats that we just went through for January, February, and March. We'll skip those and go into the graphs as they have the same data. So looking at adoptions, we started trending up a little bit between April, May, June of last year. Then we kind of trend down through September, then back up through November, down in December, and then a little bit up for January, February, and March. The expenses kind of held pretty consistent. Adult Protective Services, ebb and flow throughout the year. You see it go up and down, and then up. We're at 135 for March, which is the highest we've been in the last year. CalFresh, we're trending downwards on cases and expenses, which is due to HR1 and the ending of the COVID-19 regulations and things that we had, where we had max allotments for everybody and a lot less regulations on applying for CalFresh.
So you mentioned HR1. Is the impact, you're going to address the impacts of what that's going to do to the county?
Nationwide, actually, there's a trend in decreased cases, and so I think...
Because they don't qualify?
Well, I think people are just being cautious with work registration requirements. Okay. You know, the 80 hours a month that they're required to perform. And for that reason, people are just allowing their cases to lapse or to discontinue on their own. But we are seeing a national trend where the benefits for SNAP are actually, or the cases for SNAP are decreasing. And we're seeing that here too.
Thank you. For CalWORKs, we're holding pretty steady until about September, October. And then we've been trending downward since then for cases. Foster care is pretty steady, minus September of 2025, we had an increase, but then it dropped back down.
What causes those spikes? There was a spike in November for adoptions, and then there's that spike in September. What do you know? Why?
I saw that as well, Supervisor Ogren, and I don't have an answer to that, but I can definitely research that one more for adoptions.
That was pretty big.
Yes.
I mean, it's not, I hate to say this, but it's like, it's not like puppies at Christmas.
Right. I definitely will follow up with the board on that question. I'm not sure what the increase is for March of 26 for adult protective. I saw that as well, and
right.
I can follow up on that one. That was very significant.
And there's a big downturn in September and then a big spike in November. And it's like, what?
Right. I can speak to the decline in the CalWORKs in that we generally see caseload decreases due to tourism. Things start opening back up a little more. So we do see decreases there. Seasonal decreases.
So moving on, general assistance, we were trending up till like October, November, and then we kind of trended down a little bit towards March. And then in-home supportive services, we took a big dip in August, September, and October, then it's picked back up since November. And then Medi-Cal.
Go back to that one real quick. What are you telling us there with the expense line?
So the expense line, because it's the IHSS MOE to set cost, so every year just goes up 4%. So every month we pay the same amount for the year.
Okay.
So that tick up is the 4% increase.
Okay,
and
gotcha.
That's consistent.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. And then Medi-Cal, ebb and flows. We go up, then down, starting in August, went back up through October, down November, up December, and then we're trending downwards now towards the end of the fiscal year, which could be towards the HR1 implementation, things that are coming through. Questions or anything?
Yeah, how did any of this correlate with seasonal workforces in the county?
When income increases, it does. I mean, when income increases, benefits are either decreased or they're no longer eligible, since all of the programs are being tested, meaning they all have income thresholds that they're not allowed to exceed. So anytime the income increases.
Some of these look like seasonal trends.
Yeah.
Other questions? No? Wow.
5 minutes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Now we'll recess the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors and convene the Flood Control and Water Conservation District. This point in time is for public comment on flood control. Is there any public comment online?
Showing none online.
I'm seeing none in house. Consent agenda.
Can I pull B2?
Sure.
Move to approve the balance of the consent.
Second.
Okay. Director Valenzuela?
Sure.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
Director Cobbsett?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
And Director Howe?
Aye. B2.
So, just curious, what, I mean, obviously it's something we need to do, but I just want to get a backdrop to what's going on.
Okay. I had a brief conversation with Supervisor Valenzuela and a brief conversation with Cobbsett, and he said he'd like me to say something about this. So this looks like just a standard, you know, contract that we're raising for the next year. We all know.
Just need your name.
Adam Filippone, Director of
Thank
Blood
you.
Control. Sorry, Wendy. So this looks pretty standard. There's a little more to it. One thing that I really zero in on, cost increases happen. We all know the cost of everything are going up, but unneeded cost increases is what I zero in on. I don't appreciate unneeded cost increases, so I came here to make a statement about this cost increase today. So normally at the Lake CSU, on bigger weekends and stuff like that, we'll have Big Valley Sanitation come in. We did it for 4th of July. Yeah. Put some porta potties out to better help the public out to have access to bathrooms and stuff like that. Recently this year, we have had a string of vandalism on the bathrooms at Lake CSU, and so we are having to do this more often. And we really hit the threshold with our contract with Big Valley Sanitation because of it this year. And so we felt the need to work with Big Valley and find a number that works to kind of project the future. We are getting, basically at this point, I've been having to make the call to close the bathrooms to the public, the permanent bathrooms, because of the vandalism. The vandalism has been happening during the week. My initial investigation, I believe it is happening locally, with spray painting, damaging of sinks, and explicitives being spray painted about data centers, including Nazi symbols, stuff like that. And so, unfortunately, we've had to close those bathrooms off to the public, and then the county is on the hook to bring in proper bathrooms for them to use. As a flood control district director, I'm not going to tolerate it. I'll tell you that right now. We had the same thing happen at our sanitation sites. We spent a little bit of money, and we had 9 arrests in 3 weeks. And I will be working with the sheriff closely to try and put a cap on this, too. So, but again, it's going to cost more money, unneeded cost increase.
And I wish the people here, they see the ones, you know, what we are continually up against. You know, this is hopefully something we can nip in the bud, just like we did at the transfer station. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, South County is a very much a tourist draw, and you know, I like to put our best foot forward there. Having the restrooms open is a priority for me, of course, but, mm-hmm. I mean, what a waste of money.
Yeah, I agree, but
it is what it is.
And if you don't supply something, you're going to have a bigger mess to clean up. Yeah. So,
thank you for getting the porta potties out there, particularly for the 4th of July.
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you.
Director Valenzuela?
Yes.
Director Obrin?
Aye.
Director Cobbsett?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
Director Helm?
Aye. During the CSU Flood Control and Water Conservation District and convene the CSU Power Authority, item 9A, public comment.
Showing none online.
I'm seeing none in house. Minute approval.
No corrections.
Move to approve.
Second. I am actually seeing public comment.
Sorry.
David Webb, you should now be able to mute.
This is for CSU Power Authority. Hello? Comment for Power Authority only? Guess not.
All right.
Okay.
Looks
like a motion and a second on the minutes.
I'm sorry, I missed. I've got Supervisor or Director Cobbsett, and who was the second? Thank you. And that was for the CSU Power Authority minutes, correct?
Right.
All right. Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Obrin?
Aye.
Director Cobbsett?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
And Director Help?
Aye. During the CSU Power Authority, we convene as CSU County Supervisors. Item 10A, appointments. Wendy.
Okay. First one here is Dunsmuir Rec and Park. These are scheduled vacancies. Their terms were up June 30th. These new terms would end June 30th of 2030. Let's see. Make sure I find out who I have here. We did get a letter of interest in reappointment from Jack Sutcliffe, but incumbent William Newman said he was not interested, so if we could appoint Mr. Sutcliffe and then continue the other one.
And I'll make that motion.
Okay. Thank you.
We're trying to find someone to fill the spot.
I do have something in the works for Mount Shasta, but I don't know about Dunsmuir.
Okay.
And do we have a second?
A second.
Thank you. All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Supervisor Oberyn.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Hell.
Aye.
Okay. So this one now is Mount Shasta Recreation and Parks District. Also, new terms would be to June 30th of 2030. I have a letter of interest in reappointment from incumbent Heather DeArton, and no interest from John Courtney. I do have somebody that has been emailing back and forth but has not confirmed that they're interested. If we can continue that one, that would be great.
Same motion.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Supervisor Oker.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Hell.
Aye.
Okay, what do we got here? So, Grenada Sanitation District has had a couple of resignations, and they are without a quorum at this point. We did the posting for them, and at this point, we have letters of interest from Harry Shelvock and David Gies, G-I-E-S. Both are eligible as registered voters and live within the district, and those two appointments would bring them to a quorum, then the district can deal with further appointments from there.
Move to appoint.
Both?
Yep.
Second.
Thank you. All right. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Oberyn, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Hell.
Aye.
Through the chair, real quick. I know that Mr. Cena and Mr. Harris have dropped off of this. Do we do any type of resolution, or can we do a resolution?
We just could. I mean, I don't know who would instigate it. Maybe
I'm looking at Joanne.
Joanne.
Yes, something that could recognize their service, because I know they've been on there quite a while.
They were longtime members. Yes.
Thank you.
Alrighty, so what have we got left is Siskiyou County Assessment Appeals Board. This would be for a third. We had two people appointed at the last board meeting. This is one term ending September 3rd of 2030. I do have a gentleman interested and qualified. He is, make sure I get his name correct, Kevin Sisney. And he is a lawyer, so he does qualify under our rules for filling that vacancy. But if we could correct the motion, I was off on the expiration date. The expiration date truly should be September 6th of 2027 for the term ending. And he would be the last one, then they would no need to continue anything from here.
Move to approve.
Second.
Alrighty. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Oberyn.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Hell.
Aye. 11A, minute approval.
Received no corrections.
Move to approve.
Second.
Alright. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Oberyn.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Hell.
Aye.
It's not 5 o'clock yet.
Not yet.
I know. Do you want to do some board and staff notes before we go to close? Anybody have any? I'll pass.
I'll pass.
Okay, with that, we're going to go to close.
Okay.
Thank you.